Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you to the Tyranny Response Network and Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben here, beginning the eighth week of our broadcasting on the greatest station on earth for hearing the truth. Tyranny Response Network, this is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Once again, our phone number here at the station, 864-201-6955. You can call in with your questions and comments to 864-201-6955. You're also free to send us questions and comments by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. We have a few things that have gone on in the news this week and that relate to the Christian worldview. We're probably going to be discussing some of those things. I have a couple of interesting emails and comments from folks, which we'd like to get to as well. But I'd like to start the show off right away by reading the Eighth Amendment Bill of Rights of the Constitution. For the last week or so, we've been trying to go over all of the Bill of Rights just because people are ignorant of what the Constitution says, the Declaration of Independence, as well as the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, also known as the Bill of Rights. And the Eighth Amendment simply says this: excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. So this is where you TV watchers and movie watchers get the understand the theme comes from, about no cruel and unusual punishments being inflicted, right here from the Eighth Amendment, or the Bill of Rights number 8. We also have a quip from P.J. O'Rourke today. We always like to read P.J. O'Rourke's. He says, "At the core of liberalism is the spoiled child, miserable as all spoiled children are, unsatisfied, demanding, ill-disciplined, despotic, and useless. Liberalism is a philosophy of sniveling brats." We also have another couple quotes from him. "The mystery of government is not how Washington works, but how to make it stop." And "One of the annoying things about believing in free will and individual responsibility is the difficulty of finding somebody to blame your problems on. And when you do find somebody, it's remarkable how often this picture turns up to be on your driver's license." Very cute. And finally, he says, "The free market is ugly and stupid. Like going to the mall, the unfree market is just as ugly and just as stupid. Except there is nothing in the mall, and yet you don't. And if you don't go there, they shoot you." Cute remarks, PJ. Appreciate your great insight. Always very helpful here on Christian Worldview to understand these things. Well, one thing that really struck me this morning when I opened up just scanning some of the news, I saw that the Fox News Network, foxnews.com, had one of its lead stories off to the left says, "Hunter S. Thompson dead at age 67. And I'll tell you why this really got to caught my attention after I read the article to you. It should be obvious to you as well. Aspen, Colorado, Hunter S. Thompson, the acerbic counterculture writer who popularized a new form of fictional journalism in books like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, fatally shot himself Sunday night at his absent Aspen area home, his son said. He was 67. Hunter prized his privacy, and we ask that his friends and admirers respect that privacy as well as that of his family. Juan Thompson said in a statement released to the Aspen Daily News, Pitkin County Sheriff Bob Broudis, who is a personal friend of Thompson, confirmed the death to the news. Sheriff's officials did not return the calls to the Associated Press late Sunday. Juan Thompson found his father's body. Thompson's wife, Anita, was not at home at the time. Besides the 1972 drug haze classical about Thompson's visit to Las Vegas, he also wrote Fear and Loathing on the campaign trail 72. The central character in those wild, sprawling satires was Dr. Thompson, a snarling drug and alcohol-crazed observer and participant. Thompson is credited with pioneering new journalism, or as he dubbed it, gonzo journalism, in which the writer made himself an essential component of the story. Much of his earliest work appeared in Rolling Stone magazine. Fiction is based on reality unless you're a fairy tale artist, Thompson told the AP in 2003. You've got to get your knowledge of life from somewhere. You have to know the material you're writing about before you alter it. An acute observer of the decadence and depravity of human life, or American life, Thompson also wrote such collections of Generation of Swine and Songs of the Doomed. His first ever novel, The Rum Diary, written in 1959, was first published in 1998. Thompson was a counterculture icon at the height of the Watergate era, and Richard Nixon once said he represented the dark, venal, and incurably inviolent side of the American character. Thompson also was the model for Gary Trudeau's balding Uncle Duke in the common strip Doonesbury, and was portrayed on screen by Johnny Depp in a film adaptation of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Other books include The Great Shark Hunt, Hell's Angels, and The Proud Highway. His most recent effort was Hey Rube, Bloodsport, The British Doctrine, and The Downward Spiral of Dumbness. His compound in Woody Creek, not far from Aspen, was almost as legendary as Thompson. He prized peacocks and weapons. In 2000, he accidentally shot and slightly wounded his assistant, Deborah Fuller, trying to chase a bear off his property. Well, this great American icon, Hunter Thompson, is now dead at the age of 67. Well, if you're listening to some aspects of this guy's life, you find a very, very sad situation, don't you? Here is a man that epitomizes the anti-Christian worldview. Not only was he involved with drugs and the high life that comes in places like Las Vegas at times, but this was a man that was severely depressed, obviously. He saw the vanity of living and of life, and he looked upon American culture and all its decadence and venality or corruptness with perhaps some great admiration. Yet in the end, his godless philosophy caused him to take his own life. And really, if you are listening to the show, and we encourage everyone to listen, non-Christian or otherwise, we want you to pause and think for a moment about your own life. What is your own life, after all? You are but a vapor that appears for a moment and then vanishes away at any rate. But what is the hope of existence? Is our next hope simply a warm meal? I remember years ago when I was teaching at a community college in Hawaii, a fellow professor named Andy came to me and said one day as I was reading in the break room, he said, John, I can't understand how someone as smart as you could be a Christian. And I said to him, Andy, I can't understand why someone could be as smart as you and have no hope. I said, Andy, what is your hope? And he said to me, John, I hope that I can go home tonight and have a warm meal. That was his only hope that he could think of. To me, this is a tragedy, a vanity, that life would go on and really no hope and no purpose. And people like Thompson and John Sartre and other philosophers and people who follow the materialistic philosophy of life often come to their own ruin, their own end, and commit suicide because they realize that life is completely vain without Christ. There is no purpose in living. Ultimately, if you even make a dent in the cause for liberty, you can be right about economics, you can be right about your political philosophy, but in the end, if you have no hope and if you have no cause for living and you have no reason to believe in an afterlife that you could be with Christ forever in paradise, then what is the purpose of going on? And I think ultimately these people take their own lives for that very reason. So liberty is a great truth, but it also can be an idol for some people. I notice that some libertarians, in my view, become so caught up with liberty as an icon or a philosophical paradigm, and they realize that they have some knowledge that others don't because they understand that the free market is the right way to organize a society rather than to use a central planning scheme or any other socialistic scheme. They realize these things. They think they have some of the truth, and therefore they continue on their way happily. But these things will not save you. Being right about economics and about political philosophy will not give you anything towards salvation. It will not give you any value in the day of judgment as you stand before your Creator. So we'd encourage you here on Christian Worldview today to reconsider these things deeply because you really have no hope in life outside of Christ. We've come up against our first break here on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Welcome back to the show. This is Dr. John Coben. We also, I'm glad that we just heard the Gene Papke advertisement here during the break for the NP Pros and how to support the Tyranny Response Network. Appreciate that very much. And you recall someone had sent an email, I believe it was Elizabeth, on Friday, inquiring, you know, what's going on here? Is TRN a nonprofit 501c3 corporation and so forth? And I answered, no, it's not. That that ad is misleading to many people because they believe that somehow we are. In fact, we're opposed to getting government privileges and government benefits through 501c3. And what Gene Papke is doing through his company NP Pros is allowing those who are in the system receiving privileged incomes through corporations and looking for means to write off that income by making charitable donations, a means to donate some funds through his organization to a 501c3 that's affiliated to some extent with TRN, because, and affiliated only in the sense that it's a vehicle that can be used to channel money to the show to support the network. He writes in this morning, by the way, after hearing the comment from Elizabeth. He says, "Dear John, great show this morning, Friday. I'm listening as I always do, but in spite of the fact that I've been fighting the flu for the past 2 weeks. As founder and CEO of NPPros.com, as well as being assisted in putting together the Tyranny Response Network, I'd like to address some of the concerns expressed regarding 501c3 status and fundraising. First, let me make this clear. I have no problem dealing directly with criticism, except now, because of the flu, I have no voice." He'd like to be able to be on here, I think, and say something about this himself. So let's get to it. "My experience has been that in almost every case, those who are the loudest critics are the least likely to contribute in any fashion toward the success of that particular enterprise. Example, in my 20 years as a Christian, I've discovered that those who know best how to run a church don't teach Sunday school class, never serve in any capacity, and in most cases don't tithe. But nevertheless, they have all of the answers all of the time. And the same holds true in almost every other arena. Those of us who helped form Tyranny Response Network have all contributed to the success and continue to do so. So my first challenge to you listeners is put up or shut up. If you're such purists, then pledge $10, $20, even $50 a month to the success of this undertaking. We're paying our dues and have a voice at the table. I'm more inclined to give ear to those who do likewise. Further, if I was a betting man, I'd be willing and I'd bet that those who are critical of NPPros.com haven't even been to the website yet." Well, I'm going to interject here, Gene. I'm not sure that Elizabeth was being critical in her comments. She was just curious about why we were a nonprofit 501c3, because it sounded like TRN was. So I'm just going to clarify that. I didn't take that. Maybe some other listeners did, but I didn't take Elizabeth's comments to be critical, just inquisitive, and in a very platonic sense as well. He says, with other listening audiences that wouldn't concern me, the majority of talk radio, fortunately, I can't read that, don't expect from their listeners and think, at any rate. I'm going to skip a little bit down because I'm having a little bit of trouble reading the handwriting from the hand-delivered piece. Let me ask any critics these questions, he says. Are you a member of an incorporated church, and if so, why? Number two, are you contributing to socialist security, and if so, why? Number three, are you pledging monthly support to TRN, and if not, why? And number four, if you don't like nppros.com as a fundraising vehicle for TRN, then come to one of our board meetings for TRN. If you're interested in coming to one of our board meetings, by the way, you're most likely would be invited if you simply send a note to questions@policyofliberty.net. We'll get back in touch and leave your contact information. We only ask you to bring three things. One, a better alternative. Two, an open mind. And three, your monthly pledge check payable to TRU. Sincerely, Mr. Gene Papke, founder and CEO of NP Pros and co-founder and board member of the Tyranny Response Unit Enterprises. Well, anyway, appreciate the comment, Gene. I'm not sure if the listeners was actually antagonistic at all. I think she was just more inquisitive, but do appreciate you taking the time to drop by a note with respect to your responses. And we would greatly encourage people to contribute to TRN. We are at this point listener supported, and although we're we do limp along well, and on the limited volunteer staff that we have, there's about 10 people, I'd suppose, that are most actively involved with the production of TRN and its upgrading of its facilities. But we are always in need of more people to do things, as well as capital and even in-kind donations of various pieces of equipment. In fact, this week is going to be an upgrading week, folks. We're going to hopefully not have any disturbance as far as our signal goes and interruptions in service, especially not during the live shows. But we hope to do several things of upgrade this week, one of which is going to produce a greater amount of range for us. And it may not be till the end of this week or because of the rain, maybe not till the beginning of next week when that occurs. We're also upgrading substantially our sound and recording studio capabilities, and so that's going to happen as early as tomorrow and possibly Wednesday, and hopefully, again, won't cause any interruption in service for us. In addition to that, we have a new show that's going to be coming on the air. We've got a couple other hosts that are going to be co-hosting a show in the afternoon during your drive time from 4:30 to 6, most likely, and I won't spill the beans yet because they have to get the final approval. But most likely, we'll have another show coming on in the afternoon, another talk show during your afternoon drive time. So be looking for that. That could start as early as Thursday this week for a trial run over the following Monday. So as always, things are exciting and happening here at the Tyranny Response Network. Things are really moving along. I'm just so glad that you've decided to join us today on Christian Worldview. We have many important things that we discuss here to brighten your day and to make you think, even early in the morning, to help you get on your way to work and school or whatever you might be doing. Remember, we are a homeschool-friendly program, and we appreciate those who listen to the webcast in the morning and who have an idea of liberty in your home environment and want to extend that idea by listening to Christian Worldview. This is a great show for homeschoolers to listen to, even in the background while they're doing their schoolwork. And we also encourage homeschool students to go ahead and call in. Be happy to answer your questions and discuss things that you might comment on if you give us a call here, 864-201-6955. Speaking of homeschooling, this is not going to be another one of those government school bashing days, although we could make almost every day a government school bashing day, but I have been reading this book by Bruce N. Short, The Harsh Truths About Public Schools. It's been a great book so far, and every once in a while I might jump in and talk about some of the interesting issues in here. And he is basically putting out a great deal of evidence to show that the New Age spirituality, the various pagan ideas, not just secular humanist ideas or Darwinian themes, are alive and well in the public school. In fact, they are thriving there, and without many parents realizing it, their children are being indoctrinated by these particular persuasions. I noticed, for instance, on page 33, he says, many Utah schools have illegally sponsored Native American and Gaia religions. For example, many schools use fourth grade text that declares, the earth is our mother, in wilderness is salvation, and animals know best, and other religious principles. Innumerable schools have been decorated with posters espousing similar devotionals. And he goes on to talk about all the other loony stuff that goes on in these schools, prayers to different pagan gods, or to the praise of the Mother Earth, all sorts of things. Fascinating book. I knew that the public school was depraved, but I just didn't have all the details like Bruce Short has brought out here in this great book, The Harsh Truth About Public Schools. So as the weeks progress here, we'll continue to be reporting on some of the findings in that text. We've come up against another break on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we're doing exactly that here on Christian Worldview today, or trying at least, and we'll continue to oppose tyranny, liberalism in all its forms, except for, of course, classical liberalism, which was the liberalism of Thomas Jefferson that had been completely perverted and twisted by the likes of the great liberal leaders of this country as they became in the new form, like Abraham Lincoln, Woodrow Wilson, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, often called the liberal trinity. And if you know anything about history, and especially their lives and policies, you know exactly why. Well, we have a few other interesting things happening in the news today that I thought would relate a bit to the Christian worldview. For instance, one thing came out, this is actually a couple days old now, but I saved the story over because I thought it might be of some interest. CBS college student Jason, college student Jason just commutes an odometer spinning 2,000 miles a month. As CBS News correspondent Sandra Hughes reports, his monthly gas bill once topped his car payment. I was paying about $500 a month, says Just. So Just brought a fuel-efficient hybrid to say goodbye to his gas-guzzling BMW. And what kind of mileage does he get? The EPA estimate is 60 in the city, 51 on the highway, says Just. And that saves him almost $300 a month in gas. It's great for Just, but bad for the roads he's driving on because he also pays a lot less in gasoline taxes, which fund highway projects and repairs. And as more and more hybrids hit the road, cash-strapped states are warning of rough roads here ahead. Now, isn't that an interesting problem? What a dilemma. It reminds me of the old problem they had when the government had when they were publicly supporting with price subsidies, price supports, tobacco farmers, and at the same time promoting information and programs to help people to quit smoking. It was really an odd dilemma, in a sense, almost paradoxical, that the government would be supporting tobacco growth and trying to curtail it on the other. On one hand, supporting it, on the other hand, trying to curtail it. Well, here we have the government trying to tax you and get some money so it can build roads and maintain things through the gasoline tax. And it does so by people buying a lot of gasoline. Now that's been the case, people were complaining that there's too many fossil fuels being burned. You know, we read about these wacky ideas that there's a global warming significantly caused by humans, and that this global warming because of the CO2 emissions largely from driving automobiles are going to cause us an international disaster, a worldwide chaos, or, you know, they even have movies on the global warming scheme where they have the tidal waves hitting New York and so forth, all this fantasy. Well, at any rate, We think about this sort of in a paradoxical manner. We have people who are saying, look, we need to have more gas consumption so we continue to get the tax to build the roads, and other people saying, no, we're glad to have these hybrid automobiles so we can consume far less fossil fuels, far less gasoline. So which is it going to be? Well, what will probably happen is we'll all end up having to use these hybrid automobiles down the road because the environmental pressures, unfortunately, or maybe we won't, but this would be one likely goal. And as revenue dried up for building roads because of the gas tax went down, they'll simply have to institute a new kind of tax, whether it's a battery tax, a use by the mile tax. They'll actually measure your odometer. Every year they get to have people send in a reading off of their odometers and find out how many miles you've actually used the road. And whatever that number is, they'll charge you a tax rate accordingly. Just be watching, folks. It'll be the latest tax coming up. And this is actually mentioned in the article, something called tax by the miles. Tax by the mile. That's the new program, a new kind of policy thought of by the latest tyrants to try to take away your money and try to fund their projects, infrastructure or otherwise. Isn't it interesting when we think about, in economic sense, things like road building? When you talk to people and you say to them, look, let's get down to brass tacks here. Let's think about the state. Is the state something that's really good for you? Is it your friend? Or is it something that's evil always? And they say, well, you know, and they go back and forth with you on it for a little while. And then they say, well, look, we know the state's, you know, is important, and I really appreciate some things that they do. And I say, like, what? What do you appreciate that the state does for you? Well, they build roads. Isn't that the one thing that you hear from people? Well, they build roads. Let me tell you this, folks. I appreciate the road system in America as much as anyone else, and it is a good road system. But the fact that government builds something and can produce something that's a good doesn't necessarily make it a good thing that they do so. We've talked about on other shows the example I give in my book, Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, the whole issue of hamburger meat. What if a government said no one else can build, you know, can make hamburger meat but the government? And they produce a mighty fine product. You have different grades just like you would now, and maybe even better quality. Who knows? Maybe you know, I don't know how much better quality you can get. But let's say you have more of the better quality meats available. Well, is it good the government produces the hamburger? Well, if that's all the information you have, you might say, yeah, it's fine. What difference does it make if government produces it or the market? Well, what if the price were $100 per pound? What if instead of paying $2 a pound or whatever hamburger meat goes for these days, you had to pay $100 a pound because you had an inefficient government making the meat? Well, then you wouldn't say it was so good anymore, would you? You'd rather be back in the free market having people compete to produce a better product. Well, it's the same thing with roads, folks. There's no reason to believe that the free market can't build roads. As a matter of fact, in many countries, the free market does build roads. They are toll roads. And you say, well, that's just like having a tax. Well, of course it is, like paying a fee in that sense. But it's far lower than government tax-funded programs, because there's a competition between producers for road services. Now, there are problems with private road systems around the world. One is that when government gives them monopoly privileges to operate a road in a certain circumstance, and that's frequently the case, by the way, when that does happen, then you do have a problem with monopoly and high tolls and so forth. But as far as the actual construction of the road, and it's easy to see that free market firm and markets can do it firms can do it in the free market. There's no reason to believe that only governments can build them. And if you had the true liberty to build roads freely, one next to the other, then you would not have the problems of lack of competition. We would actually see success in road building in the markets. So the alternative is not the tax by the mile. The alternative is to let someone privately own all the roadways and let there be free entry and exit into markets for building roads, and then you would have the highest quality roads at the lowest price. That's our solution, folks. And as Christians, I think we need to begin to adopt a more economically sound rule of thumb for our thinking about policy. Let's not just jump to the conclusion that governments do something well, like build roads, and therefore they're justified in their existence, because you may just be paying $100 a pound for your hamburger. Anyway, we've come up to the top of the hour. It's time for a break on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome to the show. This is Dr. John Coben. We're thankful that you come back to be with us here on Christian World Day this morning. We were just having some production hiccups here. I don't know if you heard that coming back in off the break, so we're happy that you're able to listen in, and we apologize for jumping ahead of the gun there. Listen, if you happen to know people that like to listen to the show outside of the Greenville area, please have them tune in on the web to policyofliberty.net. And look for the webcast link, which simply says live. The word live is underlined at policyofliberty.net. You can tune in there worldwide 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to the Tyranny Response Network. And specifically, they can listen to Christian Worldview by clicking that link between 7:30 and 9 Eastern Time. That's, of course, when the show is live. If you're listening at another time, the show is not live, and we're glad that you're listening to the recording. But don't obviously call in during that time. Do send your questions and comments by email, however. Be happy to read them on the air. In fact, we have a couple of emails that came in here. One is from Brad, who sends in a poem about the 7.62 millimeter. He says, "I never knew the man I killed on that Arabian summer day. I never knew the pain he felt as his life had slipped away. I never knew his children lost by bullets aimed astray. I never saw his crying wife when she heard the news that day. I never knew the vows he swore or to the God to whom he prayed, his promise to avenge beloved victims or foreign evils who wished to stay. I will never forget the eternal tragedy of that man's final day. When he ran across the alley shooting, what decisions could I make? He shot at me, he chose to die, no glory for the brave. I chose to live, I pulled the trigger, the filthy gutter was his grave. In every war people die, war is hell they say, but they didn't know the man, they don't know the man I killed like I knew him that day. If I could have met the man I killed before I took his life away, I would have told him I wish we could have met another time, another place, name withheld in Iraq." Interesting side of war. You know, one of the things that governments frequently have to do, and I think it's so against a Christian worldview personally, is they have to demonize the other side and call them names or put them down or humiliate them to such a way. I think, you know, during the Vietnam conflict, Vietnam War, we had people being called gooks instead of being called human beings or Vietnamese. And, of course, when someone's shooting at you, you have really nothing else you can do but to defend yourself. Even if you're over there under the auspices of, Lyndon Johnson or whoever it might be who's promulgating the current war, like if you're in Iraq under G.W. Bush, you need to defend yourself. But what a tragedy that you have to shoot and kill other people who also have families, have lives, who have children and so forth, just as you would. What an extreme tragedy it is of life that warfare exists. We're in favor of peace here because the Christian worldview tells us that, as Christ said, blessed are the peacemakers. That's not to say that we can't have self-defense, that when we're attacked by bands of thugs, that we can't defend ourselves, or we can't defend ourselves against evil states when they rise up to tyrannize us. But it is an ugly thing, it is a horrible thing, that life must be lost, and that so much calamity must be brought upon families of individuals who are simply, in many respects, trying to struggle to survive, just as you and I might be struggling to survive in this world. Very few people who are killed in war are the actual intrinsically evil thugs that have nothing but malicious thoughts and malevolent motives towards the rest of humankind. And they are simply, instead, those who are forced into the military by their governments, by their states, and go out to fight the nationalistic or religious wars. Now, once again, I'm not saying that it's wrong for us to defend ourselves against people when they attack us, but I'm saying it is a tragedy of human history that war exists because of the sinful hearts of men and because, really, the prompting of false religion, the prompting of evil states, causes so many wars to begin and to be promulgated. We need, as Christians, to be those who promote peace in the world. As our ultimate objective is peace. And I'm talking about spreading peace by democracy, the George W. Bush means. I'm talking about a true and lasting peace that comes through a knowledge of Christ. That's our ultimate goal. Until the Christ returns, unfortunately, we still have wars. There's no way to avoid them. And yet we often don't think about the guy who's the recipient of the bullet. How many families he had. You know, my wife and I were one time looking at disgust with a film last year of an American tank just rolling over a guy's taxi because it was suspected that it was something wrong with it. I heard another story recently that the American government didn't know how to use or get rid of all of Saddam Hussein's automobiles. Apparently Saddam Hussein had a tremendous automobile collection, first editions in perfect condition, various automobiles going back 100 years, not just various, I mean hundreds of different automobiles, just a, almost, you know, not priceless, but a very valuable collection of these automobiles. Since the military couldn't decide on what to do with them, apparently they just rolled over them all with their tanks and crushed every one of them, destroyed them all. What a stupid thing to do, it would seem. Well, at any rate, when the tank rolled over that poor taxi driver's cab, we thought to ourselves, you know, this is a poor guy. He's probably accused by somebody doing something wrong, probably in the wrong place at the wrong time. But here's somebody who's a relatively poor person. He's not someone who, like your typical American, has everything he wants in life. But he's somebody who's just struggling to survive in a developing country. And you just wipe out his means of livelihood by crushing with your American tank his taxi. Well, that's a sad thing. That's a tragic thing. And we hate to see people's lives who are just caught in the middle of these wars promulgated by governments or by religious zealots come to this sort of end. It's a very sad and tragic thing to see that happen. So at any rate, these kind of poems, they touch me in a sense, because I think there's a human side to war that is lost when all we're looking at is as people who are renamed gooks or whatever they're called in Iraq, instead of being human beings that are created in the image of God. Well, again, we've come up to another quick break here. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We'll be back in just a second.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we're back here on Christian Worldview. Again, the eighth week of Christian Worldview. We're encouraged by the number of people tuning into the webcast. We encourage you to encourage others to do the same thing. Tell your friends, families from here and abroad, far away or nearby, to go ahead, if they're near their office or their home computer, they can listen via the internet at policyofliberty.net, clicking the live link. We have a couple other things that came up in the news over the weekend that seemed to be very interesting from a Christian worldview point of view. One was the Senate's OK's ban on genetic discrimination. It says that the Senate voted Thursday to protect people who are reluctant to have genetic testing for breast cancer and heart disease because of fears the result might cost them their jobs or their health insurance. It skips on. It says the White House supports the measure, saying that in a statement that the potential misuse of genetic information raises serious legal and moral issues. And skipping on in the article, it says from Edward Kennedy, people fear cancer, but many also fear losing their jobs or their health insurance even more. The bill would, for the first time, allow the Departments of Labor and Health and Human Services to take direct enforcement actions against insurance plans that violate the bill's protections. It would completely ban collection of genetic information prior to enrollment in a health plan. Karen Ignagni, President of America's Health Insurance Plan, said her group was not opposed to the Senate's bill and agreed that people should undergo genetic testing with peace of mind. Well, that's an interesting comment, and people are probably wondering, what should a Christian think about this? Don't we want to protect our jobs? Why don't we want to allow our employers to know about our health circumstances or insurance companies? Well, believe it or not, folks, in the free market, there is a way that this could be dealt with more effectively than having governments create bureaus and many agents to go out and enforce particular provisions of an act like this. It is indeed a tragedy when someone is prone to particular cancers or other kinds of things that could deplete their ability to work or cause them to have a higher risk that insurance companies would have to make. On the other hand, in the free market, those who are free of those ailments would also be are also harmed by this legislation because they're lumped in with along with everybody else. It might well be better to have employers have any kind of test they want as a condition of employment as long as a person agrees to it. In other words, let's say you have company ABC that opens up their doors, or ABCDE, since there doesn't sound like a radio network or a television network, and ABCDE opens its doors and says, look, we only hire the best and brightest employees, and because of that, we're able to pay twice the market wage that people normally get. If you work for Federal Express and you normally get $20 an hour, or driving a UPS truck, or you work in an office and you get $12 an hour, instead you might get $40 an hour or $24 an hour respectively by working for this ABCDE firm. And you say, well, okay, they can do that, and people line up in the doors trying to get there, and they say, but look, if you're going to agree to work for us, you have to be able to give us this test, this genetic test, and if you won't give it to us, we appreciate your interest, but we're not going to, without your consent, hire you. You've got it. This is a condition of employment. Why would people be opposed to that, the healthiest people working for one firm? Is there a Christian angle on this thing? It seems to me that the most effective way for an employer to set up his business is indeed to use voluntary contracts to pay more for having people that are free of any potential genetic defects and going ahead and hiring them. That would leave room in the market for the people who are not qualified to work for such a place to go elsewhere at a lower wage. And you say, well, it's not fair. We all ought to get the same wage regardless of this. Well, this is simply not true, folks. I mean, I may want to make as much money as Michael Jordan did, and I may think that, you know, just because he can fly through the air and dunk a basketball like he can and I can't quite do it as well, I should be able to get paid just as much because I'm also a human being. But, folks, it doesn't work that way. Just because, you know, your daughter or my daughter, you know, wants to be just as beautiful and receive just as much money as the Miss America or Miss Universe gal for her outstanding looks that God gave her, doesn't mean that she should or can. You see, markets aren't necessarily fair in the way that human beings often think about fairness, and biblically we have no reason to uphold these egalitarian notions. Why should it be that one human being has to receive what other human beings receive, regardless of physical characteristics, genetic traits, intellectual capabilities, and so forth? It just doesn't make sense, folks. God made us all differently, and indeed people are rewarded differently in society according to what people value at the time. But that is the way the market functions, and it's better to leave it alone and let it operate rather than have government meddle with it or interfere with it, try to use an equalizing feature, much as this this Kennedy idea. And, of course, the Senate supported it 98-0, so apparently all the people in the Senate are sold out on this idea. Well, I don't see it, folks. If you have a comment or question, I'd like to discuss it with you, but just having read it, it doesn't make sense to me that this would be a good idea, something we'd want to actually instill as public policy, even though it has been so. In similar related news, talking about Christians today, Bill Maher says that Christians have a neurological disorder. He says that parents drill religion into the kids' heads using biblical fairy tales. From WorldNetDaily.com, television personality Bill Maher, host of HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, says Christians and other people who are religious suffer from a neurological disorder that stops people from thinking. Well, we have to give him some credit here, that Christians are gullible and oftentimes don't think. But I'm not sure that that is only true about Christians. I think it would be said about any ethnic group or any religious organization. And I don't know if Bill Maher knows of a particular group that is free from being like sheep or sheepish, I should say, or stupid or ignorant or whatever the word might be. But at any rate, perhaps he does know such a group. I'll continue on here. Appearing as a guest on MSNBC's Scarborough County this week, Maher told host Joe Scarborough, we are a nation that is unenlightened because of religion. I do not believe that. I do believe that. I think that religion stops people from thinking. I think it justifies crazies. I think flying planes into a building was a faith-based initiative. I think religion is a neurological disorder if you look at it logically. It's something that was drilled into your head when you were a small child. It certainly was drilled into mine at that age, and you really can't be responsible when you're a kid for what adults put into your head. The former host of Politically Incorrect said the lack of enlightenment of so many Americans means the nation actually has more in common with its enemies than one might think. Said Mayor, when you look at the beliefs of such thing, do you go to heaven? Is there a devil? We have more in common with Turkey and Iran and Syria than we do with European nations and Canada, nations that, yes, I would consider more enlightened than us. Maher explained that he was not singling out evangelicals, but was targeting all religious people. I think the vote in Missouri rejecting same-sex marriage and a lot of other states is because people are religious, Mayor said. They don't have to be evangelical, but they're religious. They believe in religion, which is, I think, as it was Jesse Ventura who had that quote about religion, is a crutch for weak-minded people who need strength in numbers. Folks, this is the result of a non-Christian humanistic education, whether it be from the public school, and most likely was, all the way through college and reading of secular philosophy, as this guy Mayer has done. This is why places like the Tyranny Response Unit and the Tyranny Response Network exist, to combat this kind of tyranny, not just from the state, but the ideological tyranny that comes down from these people that continually preach to us in the mass media, in the major networks or major radio stations. This guy does not know what he's talking about. Christianity has been one of the greatest liberating forces in the history of the world and has produced some of the greatest thinking in the history of the world. Why? Because Christians make the most serious scientists. Christians make the most serious investigators, because we want to know God's creation, we want to know more about God, and we want to be diligent in our tasks. These are Christian values that come out, and unfortunately, for whatever reason, he latches on to things he considers to be fairy tales and somehow believes that people use them as a crutch, or as Marx better put it, an opiate, so they wouldn't have to think. Have to give him credit that Christians and saying that Christians don't think. But that's why we're here on the Tyranny Response Network, and especially with Christian Worldview Today with Dr. John Coben, that we might help you think better, not only about public policy issues and liberty, but things about basic economic theory and about basic theology, especially as it relates to the Christian's relationship to the state and the nature of the state. So we're trying to cure that problem, but I don't think that's it's particularly religious people that are ignorant. I think that other people have their own end and end up doing nothing for the cause of truth and justice in this world, even like the fellow Thompson we read about earlier today, who was famous and yet shot himself at age 67 in Aspen, Colorado. The end of all men without Christ is a humiliating end. It's a meaningless life. But Christians have meaning in their life and purpose because of what God has ordained. So we encourage that here on the show. We want to help you think more deeply, and we do worry when we see people like Mayer come and attack us, as he has, as being necessarily stupid because of our religion. It's not necessarily so, folks. Yeah, Christians are dumbed down mostly by the public school and the media, and we're here to help you disinfect the media and move on in your lives to be better than the rest. And we will prove Mayer wrong, Lord willing, in the long run. We've come up against a quick break here on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Yes, hurl it with great force. Here's some interesting quotations that our research staff sent us this morning by email. Some were very, very fascinating. Frederick Douglass said, "The life of the nation is secure only when the nation is honest, truthful, and virtuous." Thomas Jefferson said, "The spirit of resistance to government is so valuable on certain occasions that I wish it to be always kept alive." And that's remarkable to me. I wonder how many Christians truly believe that Jefferson was right about this. I talked to some Christians who like the doctrine of Jefferson, that we are endowed by our Creator with rights, certain inalienable rights, which are, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness or property. But what about the spirit of resistance? Thomas Jefferson valued resistance to government. As he says, you're so valuable on certain occasions, I wish it were always to be kept alive. He actually wanted to have a revolution every 20 years to throw out the current bums that were in office and replace them with people that might be more in tune with actually serving people rather than themselves and becoming power brokers and power peddlers. Well, at any rate, interesting thought. I think Christians should be willing to rebel against tyranny and the state. Other Christians don't agree with me. At any rate, if you have an opinion on that, please do write or call into the show. Albert Einstein said, "Unthinking respect for authority is the greatest enemy of truth." Unthinking respect for authority is the greatest enemy of truth. Couldn't agree with him more. And he's a man who probably didn't truly believe in God. And he says that great line, truth. "Under democracy," says H.L. Mencken, "one party always devotes its chief energies to trying to prove that the other party is unfit to rule, and both commonly succeed and are right." I've got to read that again. That's good. Mencken is such a wit. "Under democracy, one party always devotes its chief energies to trying to prove that the other party is unfit to rule, and both commonly succeed and are right." And then Voltaire said, "Anyone who has power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit injustices." Then we have, finally, Ronald Reagan. "History teaches that war begins when governments believe the price of aggression is cheap." Ooh. Wow, that's a good quote as well. Appreciate you sending those quotes into us, staff members, and we hope that they are of interest in spurring you to different and deep thought this morning. Environmentalism has been linked to the left, it says, and liberals and secularists, Democrats, according to the Washington Post. It says in this article, thanks to Reverend Leroy Hedman, the parishioners of Georgetown Gospel Chapel take their baptismal waters cold. The preacher has unplugged the electricity-guzzling heater in the immersion baptism tank behind its pulpit. He's also installed energy-saving fluorescent light bulbs throughout the church and has placed water barrels beneath its gutter pipes, using runoff to irrigate the congregation's all-organic gardens. Such creation care could be at the heart of evangelical life, Hedman says, along with condemning abortion, protecting family, and loving Jesus. He uses the term creation care because, he says, it does not annoy conservative Christians for whom the word environmentalism connotes liberals, secularists, and Democrats. Well, this is an interesting article and an interesting idea. First of all, folks, there's nothing wrong with wanting to care for your environment. In fact, as a Christian, you should be willing to care for the environment. But this begs the question of, well, how can you best care for the environment? Well, the best way to care for your environment is something that that is done through the market system. Anytime you have public policy enacted to care for the environment, you're going to have special interest groups getting favors at the expense of other people. You're going to have inefficient bureaucrats trying to run things when they have no incentive themselves to make a particular thing cleaner or more efficient or more useful, more long-lasting, et cetera. You're going to have all sorts of distortions in the market that occur through a coercive policy towards environmental care, including mythological beliefs in certain things like the global warming or the latest fad environmental scares that go along and sell lots of books and get people a lot of radio and television spots. What we have instead is a need to care for the environment based with our own resources. We don't want to destroy things. It's foolish for us to do so. But the extent to which we should care for things is always going to be judged by opportunity cost, the price system, and what in the marketplace we would be willing to do. With our own funds, or the funds, or in this case, of our own church. So we don't necessarily criticize this man for doing these sorts of things, although one wonders about his motivations if they're based on foolishness that comes from the ideological left and the environmental crowd, or if it's simply of a concern that they have in their church they need to conserve more for their own benefit to maximize their own welfare. If it's the latter, it's fine. I have no problem with that sort of free market environmentalism. It is a church, after all. It's their own money. They can do what they want with it. On the other hand, if it comes from a bad ideology, then I lament that these people of this church at the Georgetown Gospel Chapel have been infected and afflicted by the liberal doctrine. We're coming up to another break here on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And welcome back into the final half hour of Christian Worldview today. Before I forget it, just on a positive note, in case you hadn't heard, on February 18th, we had the Philly Five Christians were freed. The Philadelphia judge clears the Christian demonstrators of hate crimes charges. All charges, according to the Agape Press, have been dropped against 4 Christians who were arrested in October for sharing the gospel at a pro-homosexual event in Philadelphia. Charges pending against a minor who was also arrested at the time are expected to be dismissed as well. Last fall, Philadelphia police arrested 11 Christians as they were taking part in a street witnessing on a public sidewalk at a gay pride event. And we talked about that on Christian Worldview.
how glad we are, and it's a very positive and encouraging thing that these people were released. It's getting worse here in the United States of America for Christians, and because the secular humanist bent is so strong against us, and people have become infected with that so much in government, public policy arenas, we are going to feel the pain of these people's wrath coming down upon us from time to time, more and more. But nevertheless, we are we can be encouraged that in this particular instance, the people were freed. We can thank the Lord for that, actually. We also have, we're talking about environmentalism right before the break a little bit, and panelists decry the Bush science policies came up on the 20th of February. In Washington, the voice of silence is being stifled in the Bush administration, with fewer scientists heard in policy discussions, people claim, and money for research and advanced training being cut, according to panelists at a national science meeting. And reading a couple quotations from this article, it says, "In previous administrations, scientists were always at the table when regulations were being developed," she said. "Science never had the last voice, but it had a voice. Issues on global warming, for instance, that achieved a firm scientific consensus," this is not true, by the way, "in earlier years and now being questioned by Bush policymakers. Proven widely accepted research is being ignored or disputed," she said. "Government policy papers used prior to the Bush years had moved beyond questioning the validity of global warming science and addressed ways of confronting or dealing with climate change." Under Bush, said Bierbaum, the questioning of the proven science has become more important than finding ways to cope with climate change. There is quite a consensus in place that the Earth is warming and that humans are responsible for a considerable part of that through the burning of fossil fuels. "And the science is clear," he said, "that without action to control fossil fuel use, the warming will get worse and there will be climate events that our species has not experienced before." Our species. I guess this is a Darwinian advocate. Anyway, folks, I applaud George Bush for, and I don't do that very often, by the way, but for curtailing these ridiculous, nonsensical ideas, falsely called science, really pseudoscience, on the global warming side of things. There is some truth to the fact that, or what the research has shown, that there may have been small, very minuscule climate changes on account of various factors in the world today, but none of them can be clearly traced to human activity. There's no clear link between human activity and a significant warming of the Earth's temperatures. We can see that. In fact, Ronald Bailey, in his edited volume a couple years ago, called The Global Warming Myth, has articles by Nobel laureates and others in his book, university professors, academics, who debunk this entire idea about global warming and about this dramatic change. I encourage you to pick up a copy of that book. I'm sure you can get it on Amazon.com or from Laissez-Faire Books. And you wanted to go ahead and do that. It's called The Global Warming Myth by Ronald Bailey, who's the editor of that. The other side of this is strictly from a Christian point of view. We believe, unlike the Darwinians who have nothing to hold on to but their faith in a chance process, but we believe that God created the world, that man was created in God's image, and that the world will not end until God wants it to end. We believe there is a God, yes, controlling every aspect of history as he moves it in his sovereign purpose according to his will, to his predesigned end and goal. Christ will return at a predetermined stage and time in history, and only then will there be cataclysmic change in the world. Human beings will not be able to extinguish themselves before God wants them to. Human beings are not going to be able to act outside of the will of God in terms of warfare or in terms of anything they do. This is the Christian worldview, and we applaud Bush for debunking the environmentalist doctrine, although I don't know if he did it because he has a Christian worldview. I doubt that's the case, but just because it is so ridiculous on its face, there is no evidence that this that's any way credible that this global warming thing is actually occurring. We also have somebody writing in or who sent me an article today about the myth of democratic peace, why democracy cannot deliver peace in the 21st century. And this article was written by James Ostrowski. And it's a very interesting article. If you and I just mentioned it to you, and then just to get one theme out of it, he quotes from a guy named A.J. Musty at the beginning, says, "There is no way to peace. Peace is the way." And then he goes down to talk about Woodrow Wilson. And he says, "We are led to believe that democracy and peace are inextricably linked, that democracy leads to and causes peace, and that peace cannot be achieved in the absence of democracy." Woodrow Wilson was one of the earliest and strongest proponents of this view. He said in his war message on April 2, 1917, "A steadfast concert for peace can never be maintained except by a partnership of democratic nations. No autocratic government could be trusted to keep faith within it or observe its covenants. It must be a league of honor, a partnership of opinion. Intrigue would eat away its vitals away. The plottings of inner circles who could plan what they would and could render an account to no one would be a corruption seated at its very heart. Only free peoples can hold their purpose and their honor steady to a common end and prefer the interests of mankind to any narrow interest of their own." Well, this is an interesting thought, and then we have to ask from a Christian worldview, why would we expect that democracies or democratically elected states would behave in any different manner than states that are totalitarian or just communistic and in some other way, even fascistic in their organization, some other way they're organized? Well, from a Christian point of view, we do not see in the Bible any differentiation between different forms of states. There was the Roman Empire at the time when the apostles wrote, and before then, people knew only monarchy, only empire. They may have heard about the so-called democracy of Athens, but by and large, the history of the world before the 18th century or so, 19, maybe the 17th century, was largely totalitarian, autocratic, and run by monarchies and kings. So does the Bible still apply today? And, you know, I think it does. But if so, what needs to be changed when we're reading the scriptures in terms of our cultural context and so forth? And beyond that, can we actually believe that the states that were mentioned in the Bible can be superseded by some achievement of man so that the way that they get to their particular state changes the nature of the state itself so that we don't have to worry about this is the state so much, or it doesn't do so much evil in the world. Well, this is a very interesting kind of concept for Christians to entertain. My initial reaction, in fact, not just initial, my deep-seated belief is that there is no difference in the way a government comes about, whether by democracy or otherwise, that Woodrow Wilson and others are misleading you if they would teach you that you can get peace out of a certain kind of government system, a certain means of attaining a state over a particular people. It really makes little difference because the nature of states are, as the Bible says, satanic, corrupt, and will lead to more maliciousness and evil in this world before the return of Christ. It doesn't really matter how they get into office. You may have a different opinion on that, and we'd love to talk with you about that on Christian Worldview if you care to give us a call here, or if you care to send us a comment by email. We come up against a break, and we'll be back in just a minute on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We've been discussing lots of different issues today as they have an impact on the Christian worldview, and certainly some of the environmental issues are of key importance. But we have a Joe on the line now who would like to talk with us more about 501c3s, and that's an important issue for us too as Christians. And so I'd like to welcome you to the show this morning, Joe.
Thank you, Dr. Coben. It's good to be on the show. Appreciate your show and all that you do and the views you have. Wanted to talk about the 501c3. I had an issue come up in my local area 2 or 3 weeks ago where someone was complaining about a pastor putting a vote for so-and-so sign in the yard of the parsonage. And don't know what all has come up at yet, but it seemed to have some concerns with a few people that seem to be not in church and B, just want to stir up something. This whole vote, the entire vote, was like 66 votes total for this election in this little small town. So the pastor called me and wanted to know, you know, what my view was. I said, well, you know, my view doesn't necessarily matter as much as what the law really is.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading go ahead.
I said, okay, I'm listening.
And so I was reading an article here, and there's a lot of people today, matter of fact, I had dinner with a couple last night that was talking about this same issue. And in this article, a quote, it says, there's something wrong in the church today, this kind of buzzing around. And some people even comment that it seems to be so business-oriented, so man-pleasing, while many can go on discussing what they believe is wrong with the church today, this person writing this article says they notice an absence of what I believe is the large factor in the equation. And he calls it the 501c. And obviously the 501c3 is a classification that's given by the government to clubs like any type of merchants association. I'll be speaking tomorrow night for a Pendleton Merchants Association. They're 501c3, which is a non-profit.
Mm-hmm.
Clubs, organizations. And so what the benefit is to have a 501c3, and it will give you tax benefits or tax-exempt status. And from everything I read, Dr. Coben, churches that file with this government to get this status that they already have, they're no longer the Church of Jesus Christ, but they've taken on a new form, and that's the form of a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's 2 or 3 things to look at. Number one, the history, and back and checked and looked at looking back at early America, Baptist preacher named Isaac Bacchus?
Yes, right.
And he was in Massachusetts, and then one that lived in Virginia named John Leland. They had significant impact on the founding fathers in the matter of the church versus the state. And Bacchus, according to what I'm reading, was relentless in his condemnation of church being incorporated.
Hmm.
And then you go back and look at September 1791, and the Warren Association met to consider incorporation for the Baptist churches, and Bacchus spoke against it again. The incorporation was voted down at that time. They also defeated a measure to let each church decide for itself whether to incorporate or not. In 1810, Barnes sought to force the church to incorporate on those Baptists who believed that the incorporation was unchristian, and his case failed. John Leland had strong views. John Leland said that the government has no more to do with the religious opinions of men than it does with the principles of mathematics.
Huh, that's a great quote. You know, I love John Leland and Isaac Bacchus. They're two of my favorite Baptists in history. because as far as I'm concerned, they hold on to the liberty of conscience perspective of the state. And what you brought up here, Joe, is of vital importance for Christians, because I don't think there is any advantage truly gained other than a corporate business structure by going to a 501c3. They already are a tax-exempt organization, as you rightly note. As far as I understand, again, I'm not an attorney, but there may be other people who would have even a stronger view that could back it up with a citation here and there. But as far as I understand it, Christian churches go awry by trying to go and get the limited liability benefits of incorporating and the business structure benefits of incorporating, and therefore leave their natural tax exempt or tax free, completely free role for a state role, and become effectively an institution, a creature of the state, which opens them up to hate crimes legislation. It opens them up to be able to be manipulated by government edicts and controlled by government rules. And this is a no-no. This is something that's bad for churches. There's no reason, as far as I know, that churches should be incorporated as a 501c3. Limited liability can be got for the leaders of the church by other means. One way is simply to not have limited liability and just carry a big insurance policy. Another way would simply be to use common law trusts, or any kind of trust really that will work real well. Joe, can you please hold on for just a quick second? We need to take a quick break, and we'll come back for the final segment, if you don't mind holding, on Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we appreciate hurling it with such great force. We have a very insightful caller on the line today. Just wanted to make a quick follow-up. Joe's talking to us about hurling aside the liberal idea, at least I consider it a liberal idea, of incorporating churches and the false benefits that you get from that, and why Christian churches should not do so. Joe, do you have another follow-up comment as well?
Yeah, just the definition of the word corporation, in the strict everyday definition, it means a group of people combined into or acting as one body. It's derived from a Latin word, and obviously I'm reading this because I'm not too smart, but it's from this word called corpus, which means body. And in this sense, Dr. Coben, the Christian church is indeed a corporation. It is a corpus Christ, Christi, the body of Christ. It derives its existence from the authority from its head, who is Jesus Christ.
Right.
And by doing this, you take Christ, who is sovereign over the church, and you make the state sovereign over the church, and then we have to listen and obey their rules. And I see that as a problem. If you go through and read some of the things about the 501c3, which maybe we can talk another day about what you can and cannot preach against, and, sodomy, abortion, things like that.
Hmm.
So I wanted to give you a shout. I appreciate your show, and I look forward to the show in the days to come.
Appreciate that very much, Joe. Thanks for calling, and I couldn't agree more. This is absolutely correct. What Joe is, in my view, what Joe is saying is right on the money here. We do not want to have a 501c3 status for the Christian Church. It's simply a wrong-headed way to move. I wanted to move on to one other quick thing here today. We got an email come in regarding this tragic event that happened in South Carolina, right near the Tyranny Response Network, actually, in Simpsonville, South Carolina, regarding homeschoolers. This was actually reported on the local news channel, and I think it's worth repeating here. And it says that Simpsonville, South Carolina, this was reported by Fox Carolina, some homeschoolers say they were having a meeting in Simpsonville Park, which is near Greenville, when an officer started bullying them. The group of homeschoolers included six mothers and about 15 to 20 kids. Every Wednesday for the past 5 years, the group had come to Simpsonville Park to socialize and meet with each other. But they say this past Wednesday was like no other. One of the mothers in the group, Jan Blanchard, says they were just sitting there talking. I heard a man yelling, "Take your hands out of your pocket," and I turned around and he was yelling at one of the boys in the group, says another mother, Priscilla Adams. Priscilla's 14-year-old son, Glenn, says he started yelling and screaming at the boy for having a knife, then pushed him down. Priscilla says he then went for another boy, a 16-year-old, yelled at him something about having a knife. He pushed him to the ground. Simpsonville police said they call came in that someone in the park had a knife. We're talking about a guy's pocket knife, kid. Well, anyway, they say that they responded as they would to any call like that, but the officer responding to the call was dressed in plain clothes and did not identify himself at first. Priscilla says, "I was frightened. I really didn't know who he was." That's when Priscilla says to one of the other mothers tried to stop him by getting between the officer and the student. She was trying to protect a student. We didn't know what was happening. It could have been a murderer, a rapist, or anything. He was attacking one of our kids, and we were trying to stop him, says Jan. She turned to Jan and said, "Call the police," and that's when he told us he was the police. It didn't even occur to the mother that he was a policeman. He acted so insane, said Priscilla. Oh, I'm sorry to laugh, but policemen acting insane. Well, it's not really a laughing matter. It's sad when we have people with force in a society who abuse it like this. Well, at any rate, this is a tragedy. I won't read the rest of the story, but what a tragedy to have this mother then charged with, obstruction of justice and other things because she was trying to protect her own son during homeschooling event from the cops in Simpsonville. Well, what a tragedy. At any rate, wanted to put that story out there just to remind us about how abusive government can be and why our founding fathers, rightly so, were suspicious of the state and want us as Christians to be wary of it and willing to resist it. We have another caller on the line. I believe we have Chuck on the line. Good morning, Chuck. Welcome to the show.
That's right. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Well, good, yeah. I wanted to follow up on Lincoln. We talked about that a while back, and you recommended the book, The Real Lincoln, and finding it real good. I've gotten through the first four chapters. Chapter four in particular is really good.
It's a great book.
The Whig Party. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's just a great book. It's one of the best books, recent reads I've had in the last, say, 3 or 4 years.
Well, it's remarkable that the cover story of U.S. News this week is Lincoln Revealed, is what they call it on the cover, but then they name the article The Real Lincoln. Well, that's interesting. I wonder if they'll have any comparisons with the book, and they don't. They don't seem to have heard of that book. But they make an assertion in here that is the same assertion I'd heard on your show about a week ago, I think it was. Ann Coulter had written an article, and she was talking about the origin of the Republican Party. And she said that the Republican Party started as a coalition of anti-slavery groups, which seemed most unlikely. Particularly considering a lot of the quotes from Lincoln just right up to the time of the Civil War and largely into the Civil War, where he was very pro-slavery.
Right.
And here he's their candidate, leader of their party, and he's making pro-slavery statements. If they're an anti-slavery party, something doesn't ring true there.
No, they weren't just an anti-slavery party. There were some radical Republicans that would have held to that view, but it was really a merger of the old Whig movement with some other elements that formed this party.
Yeah, I'd be interested to read more about it, some balance, if you want. The article here just simply makes the same assertion that it's a coalition of anti-slavery groups.
Right. Yeah, well, I think we had a quotation here. In fact, I'll look for that while you're talking here. We had somebody mailed in, I think it was Gus some time ago, about the plaque in Charleston where it's posted somewhere, I guess, in bronze in the Fort Sumter. Here it is right here. September 16th, 1864, Fort Sumter National Monument, right on the wall. You can go see it in the Federal Monument. Abraham Lincoln says,
I will say that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races, that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of making voters or jurors out of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people, and there is a physical difference between white and black races which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. There must be in the position of superior and inferior, and as much as any other man am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white races. That's Abraham Lincoln, folks. Are you with me, Chuck?
I am.
Okay, you're just listening still.
All right. I'm listening. Yeah.
Well, that was just supporting your comment there. We have just 2 minutes left in the show, by the way, but go on ahead.
Okay. I'm just amazed and interested in knowing other sources to try to resolve this in my mind. How can this be such a popularly held belief that the Republican Party started out as an anti-slavery party, and yet they don't seem to have been acting that way?
Well, the victors rewrite history, and it's a sad tragedy that it's been the case. I really appreciate the call this morning, Chuck, and please do call again, and we can talk about this some more. Well, fortunately, we just run up against a time block here. We're about to end the show for the day, but thanks again for calling, and we'll talk to you again about that another day. The victors write history, and we have been misled to believe a lot of different things about slavery, about the Republican Party, and even things like Benedict Arnold or the number of actual Jewish people who were killed in the Holocaust. Things get inflated, things get twisted, things are changed around in a way that we don't necessarily know and can never know for sure because we weren't there. But we find that, indeed, the victors write history, and we have suffered at the hand of a revisionist time and again. We've come up against the end of the show here today. I wanted to get to one other thing, and I guess I won't have time here, but Annette, just wanted to let you know I got your note about the evolution sticker ban in Georgia. We'll go ahead and read that on the next show so we give it some more time and thought about what's going on with the evolution is not a theory, is a theory, not a fact sticker being removed from textbooks in Georgia. We'll get to that on the show tomorrow morning. Appreciate you tuning in this morning to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. Great show today, and we look forward to an even better one tomorrow and the following days on the Tyranny Response Network. Until then, God bless you, and see you then.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to homeschooler-friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network.
I'd like to talk tonight about the promise of Christian economics. And before I do that, I'd like to define the principal terms. Many people think they know what Christianity and economics mean. Last night, Jack gave us a talk saying that it wasn't until a certain event in his life that it dawned on him, the light went on, as to what Christianity was. Now, he had some disjointed truths before then, which he believed, but he didn't see the whole picture. So I think it's very important to define the terms. Many people who think they know what the words mean, upon question